Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of One of the Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I'm Craig Campbell. I am the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I make role-playing games, too. And we are here with Jeff. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you. It's good to be back. I'm Jeff with a G. I'm the sole employee of JeffQuest, which is also Jeff with a G, and I also make tabletop role-playing games. The trifecta.
It'd be really funny if JeffQuest was Jeff with a J.
That would really confuse people, but it would also be funny, so I might do it.
That could be your April Fool's Day prank.
Yes. It's with a J.
Everybody spells my name with a J anyway, so I'm going to change everything about me to a J. Do that for April Fools. Like, convince everybody. See how many people you get, like, writing on your social media. Hey, Jeff, heard what you're planning to do. You know, writing it with a J. Like, see if you can get them to do. And then, of course, then they won't get the memo that it was an April Fools, and now you'll have people in your life writing your name with a J, and it'll never change back, because they'll be like,
the more the merrier, I guess.
I want to respect the name change. I mean,
I appreciate it.
Jeff with a J. Jeff, welcome back on the show. Always great to have you. It's always great to have our friends of the pod back on. And today we have a topic that may sometimes invoke fear in the hearts of game designers, or maybe excitement. We're talking about playtesting today. Craig, you want to introduce this topic for us before we throw it over to Jeff?
Sure. I think playtesting is one of those topics that, like, there's a lot of different ways to kind of look at it, a lot of different ways to approach it. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you as a playtester might expect. And so this comes, you know, whether you're the GM or the player, if your group is doing playtesting for someone, and we can also speak to it from terms of a game designer and what you're looking for in playtesting and how you're structuring playtesting and the types of things that you're doing with that. But it's, you know, based on the game and whether it is an existing system that already has been put through its paces. Like, what have you decided to add to the system that needs testing? Whether you're designing a game from the ground up and therefore needs, you know, you need some testing. If it's something very, very simple, like, how much testing do you need? Even if it's something very complex, how much testing do you need? All the different layers and complexities of playtesting. There's a lot to talk about in all of this, and we will try to cover as much as we can.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, why'd you choose this topic?
Oh, because I do a lot of playtesting and have done so in the past, as I think any game designer does after a certain point. And also, this sort of dovetails with my other hobby that I do. I do a lot of writing, and I used to be in a writing group. And in a way, getting a story you wrote read by your peers is kind of like play testing, because you're basically like, hey, I wrote this, does it work? And invariably the answer is you know. And it's I feel like there's a lot of overlap, especially in the arena, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it, of what suggestions do you pay attention to and what don't you pay attention to, and how do you, like, accept all of that without it, you know, eating your soul and giving you imposter syndrome, or making your imposter syndrome worse.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great place to start, is whose opinions are we seeking out in our playtesting? Because I think that is really important, and there's a lot of different ways you can do this, and you might attempt many different ways to do this. How do we find our playtesters? How do we seek them out? How do we pick them? How do we know who's going to be a good playtester and who's not? Because, I mean, like, with a writing group, if you're in a writing group, maybe you know each other. Maybe it's a conglomeration of a different genre writers. People have different tastes and preferences. Same things can happen with playtesting. So Yeah, let's talk about choice. Let's talk about getting the band together.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's always easiest to if you have if you're lucky enough to have a gaming group who are willing to try things, to start with them, and that's what I usually do. But I also find that, and this is obviously not a criticism of them, their help is somewhat limited because it's like, you know, your mom, where it's like, yeah, that was cool, I like that, and it's like, well, did you think anything needed to be worked on? No, it was fine. And I found that even when my friends are very gentle in letting me down, which is nice of them, it's still valuable because I have developed, I think, a thick enough skin and enough awareness to be like, okay, you're being very nice, but clearly there are things that I saw that did not work for me. And there are, you know, and then there were things like, and it could be little things. It's like, well, I don't understand when you said this, what this means. And I don't understand how these two rules interact and yada, yada, yada. So you always, I feel like you always get something, but I have found that some of the best and harshest criticism I've gotten is when I show games at conventions, because those are strangers and they have opinions and they do not have to be nice to you because they may never see you again. And that's when it gets hard, but it's also like where you get somebody who's like, yeah, I love strategy games, and this feels like a strategy game, not a role-playing game. And if it is a strategy game, then, you know, here's my bullet points. And that's good too, because it comes from a completely different perspective. And, you know, it may have stuff in there that you can use or not, depending on what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean that, like the asking your mom for her opinion on your writing, like it's not gonna work because your mom, it's not because your mom won't give you critical feedback. It's just that she loves you and thinks that you're awesome. Sometimes it's not just like, oh, I'm afraid that. Sometimes it is. And your mom here is being substituted in for anybody who really truly deeply cares about you and likes you as a person. They're going to be more likely to see like the good sides of the writing and ignore the bad sides because they know your intentions, they know what you're going for, they know what kind of stuff you like, they know a lot about you, and they like you, so they are just more likely to not even see the flaws in something, not just that they're ignoring them. And then you have your friends who might not know you as well as somebody who really truly deeply cares about you. Like, I mean, your friends should truly deeply care about you, but I mean in that more of a they love you kind of sense. Some of them are going to be afraid to say something negative because they don't want to hurt your feelings, and that can potentially damage your friendship. So I think if when you start, your mom's going to give you good feedback. It's going to Your mom's going to give you the feedback that makes you feel good. Like, yes, I'm doing something right. This is what I want. You still want that. I think you still want that. You still want a trusted advisor who's going to say nice things to you. With your friends, you have to really make sure you're setting some norms up ahead of time. Like, hey, this is the kind of feedback I'm asking for. It will be helpful for me if you give me some critique, but they're also not going to tear you apart limb from limb. Which is also nice. I actually don't think the kind of critique that tears you apart from limb is the kind of playtesting critique that you need or should seek out. Why would I be playtesting my game with people who are not going to be fans of my game? They're not my audience.
That's something that you can easily run into, especially when playtesting at like a convention with strangers, is like somebody signs up for the game because they like the title and the blurb you gave, but then they came in and it's like, oh, it's a completely different type of game from what the thing they might want to play. I had that happen a number of times with playtesting where people would describe, well, I think it should do this, this, and this. And I'm like, and that sounds like a great game, but this is totally not what this game is about. And I will agree with both of you on the on having the people who are going to be full on encouraging and everything. I refer to it often as having you want your cheering section. You know, if you're playing in the big game, you want the section that's just on your side no matter what, that they're going to encourage you. And to get some of those folks, and there may be people in that are very close to you who are willing to just like come right out and be like, hey, this thing, this is a problem. and phrase it however they do it. And it might be nice and it might be a little grating, a little difficult to hear. But what I've found is with that type of playtesting, what usually helps is if the assumption here is that I'm running the game for them. And so I'm going to see some of the things that are potential problems in play in that moment. And the players might say, oh, hey, everything was cool. This, you know, be generally positive about everything. But then you can say, well, I felt that like this part was a little bumpy. Like this was, there was a disconnect or there was something that didn't run as smoothly as it possibly could. And when you critique yourself, you give them permission to be like, okay, yeah, I can see that being the case. And then I noticed that, and, you know, maybe offer suggestions and you can bounce ideas back and forth. So one of the biggest things I found as far as getting playtesting feedback out of people who know you is finding a way, some sort of sneaky little way, right, to give them permission and make them feel like it's okay to say something negative. And so that, you know, you can do that in a number of ways. I've had questionnaires that I've given to people where one of the questions was, did anything get in the way of the fun? This was a playtesting question that was given to me by my good friend Dave when he was playtesting. And I think it is a brilliant question to ask because you're telling them, hey, we all had fun, and they can right. agree with that. But is yeah. is there anything that got in the way of any part, you know, like any little thing that kind of got in the way of any part of that? So when by answering that question, they're sort of implicitly saying, yeah, I did have fun, but this was a thing that kind of got in the way. And so there's ways you can present those types of questions to get the feedback, even from people that know you well and who would largely be supportive and be perhaps a little averse to being overly critical.
I think if you play test with people who have play tested before, I mean, have play tested their own stuff before, kind of like with a writer's group, right? They're used to giving critiques and they're used to receiving critiques. Playing with game designers who play test their work, those can be really good play testers because they know how to give that kind of critique and feedback. If you're a game designer, you probably have some game designer friends that you could lean on and do. The pitfall with that is that I find that game designers often look at it from very diagnostic standpoint, looking really, really heavily at the mechanics and looking at the pieces rather than looking at a whole picture and a vibe, which is also equally important. A player who's not a game designer might not be thinking about those things as in depth as a game designer would be thinking of. So that's another thing to look at. But people who are used to receiving critiques, like, those are the kinds of people you want to seek out. Like, they know how to give it back. They know how to give it back in a way that's not going to like actually hurt any feelings too. You mentioned playtesting for strangers at a convention. Have the two of you done this before?
Oh yeah. Many, many, many times.
Sure. Especially early on. The credits in Die Laughing, the playtester credits are like, you know, thank you to blah, 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 like a handful of people. And the fine folks at this convention, because that was one that I was like, that's a game that I just, when I was designing it, I felt like this needs to see like as many different, because it was a weird, you know, like little GM-less thing, and it was a horror game and it was a comedic game. I was like, I want as many different types of people to play test this as possible. So like conventions felt like the right way to go. It's like, I'll get very disparate groups. They'll be like, three people will sit down and they're all friends, but then the other three people at the table will be complete strangers to everybody. And so we can see all these different dynamics play, because the game largely didn't revolve around the mechanics, because the mechanics are very simple. It was more like Jess was saying, it's more about like, are you doing the right thing with the vibe? Is it giving you the feel of like, oh, now you're making a movie and it's going from act to act, and you get, you know, are the random scenes working? Can you, you know, does that all make sense? And Just getting a lot of different viewpoints. That was a thing that I definitely did. With other games where, like the game system that I developed for Good Strong Hands has been iterated into different games where I've just kind of slightly tweaked the rules, but those play tests become very much more specific about. I don't want feedback on the basic mechanics. I know the basic mechanics work. They've worked fine for three games. You know, I'm on the fourth game. I'm looking for this part of the game. And so, with strangers, that can be more challenging because they're everything's new to them. And so they might find themselves wanting to critique everything, even the things that you are very confident are perfectly good. And so maybe in those situations, I've generally tried to find people who are familiar with the previous games, or at least one of the previous games, so they understand the system. And then I can tell them, we're not changing the system, but here's this subsystem, or here's this other part of the game that we need to kind of dig into.
Yeah, my experience is actually really, really similar to yours, where like I have my love letter to Star Trek Boldly Go, and I keep using that same core system in future role-playing games, which helps people who played with me before because it's like you played this one, so you kind of know how to play this one, which helps with onboarding, which is nice. But the other thing, yeah, it's like I know this part works. This is the new part. And for me, I like to adapt like media into my games. Like I just released A Distant Galaxy, which is my love letter to Star Wars. Star Wars has a different feel from Star Trek. And this is going back to like, how do you get people to tell you, to give you criticism on the things you want, is basically to sit down and say, here's the boundaries. The boundaries are, I know this system works. There is, like Craig said, a subsystem that I need to work, but also, does this feel like Star Wars? What about this, you know, filing the serial numbers off, obviously, so we can't have any of that IP in it, but like, is there something that I could add that would make this feel more like that thing that you like for you? And what is it? And how would I implement it? And that sort of thing. And that it's, you know, it's sort of like the old magician thing. It's like you subconsciously or consciously make the attention go to the specific thing you want it to go to so that it primes them to give you the feedback that you want, which I find is very helpful as opposed to just sitting down and saying, tell me what you think. Where people go,
I like th that's always like it's nice to start from a system that you've already play tested before, that has been already play tested, like super, super nice. And it takes less time, takes less play testing than starting from scratch. There are fewer surprises. That's really nice. And then you probably, like you guys both mentioned, like you probably have people who've already played this system before and know how it works and know if something like the new stuff that you've added or is this reskinning of something, does this actually work? I don't have the experience doing that other than the fact that I've designed a Powered by the Apocalypse game, and I've designed a couple of games that use sort of a similar system to something I've designed before, but nothing like super huge. But recently, I designed a polymorph system game, and you know they already have essentially what is an SRD for the polymorph system and like the core mechanics. They work. I don't have to worry about that. It's more of just like, okay, does this flavoring of the polymorph system work? Is what we're doing, does that work? And we play tested it at Origins and at Gen Con. And did we play tested at Origins? I don't remember if we play tested at Origins anymore. It's been so long. But we play tested at Gen Con for sure. And that's really, it's really helpful. It's really helpful to get that feedback from people who had already played the system because they were there to play a polymorph. Some of them were there to play a polymorph system. Some of them were there to just play a game, which is also helpful. But what we didn't do was have a really, how can I put this? We didn't have like a super robust play testing system in place for our two play tests that we did at Gen Con because we didn't do a survey or anything like that. And I think a lot of the good feedback you can get from your play testers is to make sure that you're right, asking the right questions. Because I think if you ask the right questions, it doesn't matter what kind of playtester you have, you can direct them to get the kind of feedback that you want to get out of the game. What do you guys do for your surveys? Craig, I know that you have questions that you ask. Jeff, I'm assuming that you also do. So let's share our survey techniques. How do we actually elicit that feedback at the end of a session or in the middle of a session?
Well, it's a question of generally, first of all, it can be different for if I'm running the system for you, and I'm going to ask you questions at the end of that, or if I'm giving a written manuscript to a group that's going to go and somebody's going to read that and run the game separately, that creates two completely different lists of questions where there may be some overlapping questions, but there's going to certainly be questions that are getting asked in the, for the game that you're given, you know, for the group that's playing it without your involvement. And that gets into the idea of like you're playtesting the system, but you're also playtesting the document. And making sure that like what you're, you know, the GM, the person who's reading the whole thing or reading a lot of it, is do they understand everything? Can they run the game, and can people play the game from the document? It's usually tied into where in the playtesting we are, like the. If I'm dealing with a system that I'm playtesting for the very first time, and it's going to be, you know, I tend to start broad strokes, like asking questions about outside of the document reading stuff, but like talking about the mechanics itself, like, you know, were the mechanics, did the mechanics produce the amount of success that you were expecting to see kind of happen in for the game as it was presented to you? And that requires that you give them a certain amount of information to know, like, are they playing heroic fantasy where it's like a power trip and they're going to be, you know, killing monsters and kicking ass? Then that group is going to be expecting a certain level, a certain percentage of success. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, if it's a grim and gritty, like the world is harsh and your characters are constantly on the verge of dying, that's going to create a different percentage of success. And so there's information that needs to be communicated to the group in order to be able to ask a lot of these questions. And so making sure that you're getting that information across when you're priming the group to play test. And that usually, you know, comes in the form of that first request to play test. I tend to not just say, hey, I'm looking for playtesters for this game. That doesn't tell anybody, like, I don't know if I would enjoy playtesting that game. I need to be like, this is a game that it's about this and it's going to be heroic and it's going to be that, you know, give them enough information that they have an expectation. And because you're playtesting to that expectation as well as playtesting to whether your characters are, you know, whether the mechanics will work at all. How often do they work? Do they work appropriately? Do they work often enough for the type of game you're trying to run? So it can get very complex very quickly.
Yeah.
But it usually starts with broad strokes of like the general system and making sure that all of that kind of makes sense and works. And then in future playtest rounds, like as you refine the system and kind of get the basics of the system nailed down, now you can start asking about subsystems. And like, if you've got like a weird, cool idea for how health is going to be handled in a combat oriented game, with, you know, hit locations or penalties to, you know, injuries and sort of those types of things, then you can start to get into that. But it's pointless to get into how do injuries affect my mechanics if your mechanics aren't nailed down to be a reasonable mechanic for a combat oriented game to begin
with. Yeah.
So get that combat oriented mechanic worked out and then start saying, okay, now what happens when I overlay penalties that come out of injuries, and what, you know, how many are too many, and does it end up breaking the system and make the system not work properly anymore? And so you start asking fine tuned questions like that down the road.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. That actually reminds me of, it wasn't a role-playing game I made. It was a card fighting game called On Guard, where it was, you know, dashing sword play and the Princess Bride and whatever. And we had front loaded it with all of these weird side mechanics and maneuvering positioning, and people couldn't figure out how to play it. And it was a slog. And so we were like, why isn't this working? Why isn't this working? And finally we were like, okay, let's pull everything out except for the basics And once that starts to work, we can slowly add stuff in. And we realized we didn't need most of the stuff that we had put in. It was just filler, and it clouded the gameplay, and it was confusing. So, but yeah, like you, one of the things that I've always found for me is that I stay in the monkey house too long, and I get used to the smell. And when I come out of the monkey house, I'm like, I made this heartbreaking work of staggering genius, and you should play it. And people are like, what are you talking about? I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't understand how the thing that you described to me is anything like this game that I'm playing. And like, that's always a wake-up call for me, but it's also the one of the reasons why you play test. And I think the big advantage of either having people play testing your game when you're there and you can't say anything, or having people play test your game when you're not there at all and they come back and they say, "I don't know how magic works, so we ignored it and we made up this thing." And that's it. And it's like, okay, that's important. Because, like, I know for me, and this is true for writing fiction and writing games, I have written and rewritten and edited rules so many times that I'm like, I know what I mean. Is this clear to another person? And it was funny. I've only played Boldly Go as a player a couple of times, and both times I'm like, oh, it's interesting that you interpreted the rule that way. That's not what I meant, but it also works, so that's fine.
That's something I work with a partner. I work with a design partner. Alex and I design games together for the most part. And even when I design stuff on my own, I'm constantly asking him for feedback. So I never feel like I'm designing in a complete vacuum, but I want to see what like people who aren't us feel. Getting that constant feedback, it like I love that metaphor. You're in the monkey house too long, everything's still looking that you're used to the smell, it doesn't smell like monkey anymore. You have to seek out those outside opinions, even if it is just to make sure, like, even if your play test is just like, okay, I am pretty sure this is gonna work. Let's just double check. And like, or like that could even be something as simple like, if you're making a game and you're not trying to get out there and like be super professional about it, do you really need to do a whole bunch of play tests and iterations of play tests? No, but you should probably get a couple of people to read it who aren't you first. It doesn't, I don't, I'm not of the opinion that all games have to work and be playable. I'm a very vibes-based person. However, if your game isn't going to be playable, people probably aren't going to buy it or play it. They might just want to read it and be like, "Oh, that's an interesting idea." Like maybe your book's more of a concept than a game, and that's fine. That's totally legit. But you gotta get those outside opinions, and then you have to actually implement them once you get that feedback, and that can be the really hard part. Deciding like, okay, what part of this feedback is useful, what part of it is valid, what part of it makes sense for what I'm going for, and how am I going to change the game to react to that? Because if you do all this play testing, you get all this feedback, and then you just publish whatever you had decided to publish in the first place, why did you go through all of the effort? Like at that point, just release the game, I guess. But if you're iterating, like you have to like make decisions on what you are actually iterating. So like going back to player preference, like you if you are playtesting with a bunch of strangers at a convention and they like games that are a certain way, and you have a very like I don't know, maybe you have a very collaborative story-based type of game, but they're used to playing more strategic sorts of games, they're going to give you feedback that are along those lines. You have to be, as the game designer, the person who makes the judgment, like, okay, is this coming from a place of like, this is what I wanted out of the game, like which we had mentioned before, is this what I wanted out of the game, which what did I not want out of the game, and then make changes accordingly. Gosh, making those changes can be really tough because it's coming from someone who's not who hasn't been with you the whole time. You can be like, ah, you just didn't understand. You didn't understand what I was going for. My genius, you don't understand my genius brain. It's not necessarily the way you get a really good game.
Yeah, I've been there, and I've mentioned it on the show a few different examples of like I fell in love with an idea, and like the Capers game had been out with the card flipping mechanic, and people really loved that. There were things that they really loved about how that system works. And I was like, I came up, it's like, oh, well, I can, there's so much you can do with cards. And that's something that I continue to love about playing cards is that there is so much you can do. And so for Capers Covert, when I was developing like vehicle chase rules, I was like, well, we could do this other thing where it's like like it still has to do with what, the high card kind of thing, but you're going to be bidding cards. And you only get so many to bid. And it's just like another gambling thing. And I was like, and this is really neat. And it was vaguely reminiscent of the system, or at least it took some inspiration from the 007 game from back in like the 80s, which had a bidding kind of system into it because it incorporated like gambling, right? Because James Bond and gambling. And I gave that to people and they were like, why isn't the initiative system for chases and everything just the normal system? And they felt like, and I had multiple playtest groups come back with basically the same feedback. And it came and it basically coalesced in my head as I've just designed third edition grappling rules, which is the rule set that works fine, works a little different than the core rules, but it's different enough that every time grappling comes up, everybody has to crack open the book and relearn how to do grappling. And I was like, oh, so like every other game session where you have a vehicle chase, now everybody's going to have to sit down and relearn how to do the vehicle chase. If you're playing covert. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's wrong. I fell in love with the thing and I had to send it to the curb, send it packing because multiple players recognized, first of all, why mess with what you've got? We like the system as it is. And you're also creating this thing that isn't going to be used enough that anybody's going to remember it. Even if it is a neat idea. And yeah, it hurt. It took like I got the feedback from one group and I was like, well, Jess, they clearly don't see the genius of this particular rules variation with the bidding card. And if they play it more, they'll love it and blah, blah, blah. And then I got three groups total come back saying basically the same thing. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's no good. And it can be hard to get the feedback that like something is simply not working. And I think like when to Jeff's comment about like when do you listen to the feedback and when do you just kind of be like, okay, well, thank you for your feedback, but I'm going to keep doing it my way. It requires, I think, two things. One is if it's coming from multiple people, you got to think about it. You can't just brush it off. And if it's it requires the willingness to truly reflect and set aside your own biases, which can be very, very difficult for anybody who has created something that they really are proud of. Or even
Well,
like are hoping to become proud of, like you're still just kind of working on it because you're like, this is my I birthed this wonderful idea and it hurts to have to say it's not working the way I want it to work.
you could decide to ignore it after receiving a bunch of feedback comments, but then you'll have to resign yourself to the fact that once you start getting comments and reviews on your work, other people are going to start saying the same stuff. So if it hurt your feelings the first time with your play testers, it's going to hurt your feelings forever if you don't change it. So is that something you really live with? Is your creative vision worth the endless comments from people who do not know you and do not actually care for you and don't know that they were play now they're not play testing the game, they purchased it with their own money and now they're making the same kind of thoughts and feedback,
We
and they're
yeah, and
sharing
we
that, like,
played it
ugh.
we played it one time and this doesn't work and we're never going to play it again. And now
Right.
maybe this is the person that's never going to buy your next game and this is the person that's not going
Exactly.
to tell their friends about your game. And yeah, I mean, if you want you can take the high road or even not even the high road, you can take your road
The
and just be like, well,
proud
I'm
road.
standing by this and this is what I believe and that's fine, but it will have there will be consequences to it. And it can be, you know, if you're trying to build it into a little company where you're actually going to make a few bucks out of it, if you're trying to, if that's your version of success, if your version of success is just knowing that there are people out there playing it and coming back to try new games of yours, that's your version of success. You are potentially hurting that. And, you know, that's a very good point, Jess, that like, are you willing to, you don't want to take the hit now. Are you willing to take the hit?
Over and over and over and over and over
forever,
yeah.
For the life of anybody's interest in this game, not that there won't be some people that'll be perfectly fine with it, because there probably will be, but you know you might get stung a bunch more. And yeah, that's I tell people, yeah, I've got a, you can tell me what you need to tell me, I've got a pretty thick skin, but if somebody kept coming back to me on a particular game saying this part of the game sucks, and I got that like every 3 months for the next 4 years, that would really hurt.
Yeah. There's this weird sort of Venn diagram you have to be in as a creative person, I've found, where you have to stick close enough to your original vision to stay true to it. You can't go and say, what do you think about my game or whatever? And then everybody's like, I think you should do this. And then you just uncritically dump it all in, because then it's just a mess of other people's ideas. But you also can't say, no, this is my perfect thing, and nothing you say can change it. Like you have to walk that middle line where you have to be confident enough in yourself to say that sounds right. And definitely if it's a bunch of people are saying the same thing and you're like, I thought this thing that I designed would do this, but everybody is doing this or saying this, it's like, okay, how can I tweak that? How does that change? Mm-hmm. And not be blown completely off course by some random person who comes up and says, your game sucks, Mr. Game Designer, and I hate you as a person. And it's like, oh, okay, thanks. You know, but also not becoming so wrapped up in the praise that you're like, I never need to change anything ever.
There's also, if you want to talk about long-term consequences too, if you're going to keep making games, there's also the possibility to keep in mind is if you put out play, if you get playtesters on board and you ask a bunch of questions and they tell in playtesters tell you, okay, this needs to be tweaked, or this doesn't seem to work, or, you know, we hope you can find a way to work this better, blah, 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 and you constantly ignore them.
Yes.
They will stop playtesting for you.
Yeah.
Or they will stop giving you actual criticism. Like, yeah, it was fine. It was great. Thanks for showing it to me.
They'll playtest for the sake of like, it's cool to try something new.
Yeah.
But they won't really be invested in providing any feedback, or they'll just say, screw it, I'm done. Because, you know, people, when you're playtesting, and we can talk a little bit about the playtester's side of things too, is playtesters, you know, go into something realizing I'm going to try this thing. It's brand new. It may be like, let's take the worst case scenario. It's a brand new system. No one has ever played this before. I'm the first part of the first group of playtesting. This game may never see the light of day. This game may never see the light of day in this form. I'm trying something that I have no frame of reference for, other than I know how to play role-playing games and I have a bunch of dice at home, so I'm ready to go. But they're putting a lot of time and effort into like learning a new rule system, and maybe they're only going to play this thing one or two, maybe only once, maybe two or three times. And so they're putting effort in.
And work. Yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah. Just,
mm-hmm. And it's, you know, they're putting in time and effort, and those are two different things. I say all the time, putting in time and effort are two very different things. And if they're traveling for the playtest and you know, playtesting has a certain feel and everything where they're going to all get dinner and stuff, they might be spending money too, to play your game. And if you're not taking them seriously, they're going to be less likely to want to do it again.
Okay. Yeah.
So one of the things I try to do with playtesters is Discord has kind of become my best friend for that, because I'll create like a Discord group chat for just the playtesters and or the playtest leads, the people who are actually taking the thing and running it. Or, you know, it can happen in emails as well. And I'll go back and ask questions. Like I'll read their their feedback. And if I have questions, if I want them to expand on anything, I'll try to make sure that I'm engaging and doing that all sort of thing. I want the playtesters, even if I don't make the change, I want the playtesters to recognize that I'm taking their commentary seriously and I'm asking them to expand on what they meant about this particular thing. And that can go a long way. And I think as a playtester, if you got that little extra, even if the thing didn't change, you said, I don't think this is like, I don't really care for this, but then, and then the designer doesn't change it, but they had a discussion with you or they came back to you and asked you questions, that at least, you know, makes you feel like, okay, well, they're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
They just differ in their opinion on this particular thing. And, you know, from the playtester side of view, or point of view, that's something to keep in mind. Like there's a certain amount of work and effort that the designer is kind of expecting you to put in, especially in the lead. The person who's going to be GMing is going to have to probably learn more of the game than you as a player are. There's a certain expectation of amount of time and effort that you're going to put into the thing. And I know GMs and, you know, or designers, and I am, and I'm sure both of you are, and many designers out there are very appreciative of the time and effort put in by,
oh yeah,
by playtesters.
Absolutely.
But it does mean that hopefully, that as a playtesting group, you know, or as a playtester, you will provide, you'll answer all the questions, you'll provide the types of, you know, like if they're saying, please answer this question, but provide an example, that you provide an example, that you give, you know, the feedback that they're asking for, then you'll get an opportunity to play test more. Like a great way to not get invited back as a play tester is to not answer the questions that you're being asked, whether it's just leaving them blank or not actually answering them the way the designer is asking you to approach the question. Or getting caught on a side tangent and talking about something that wasn't being tested, like we talked about. If the system, like, don't, if they have a question that's like, do you have any other comments? Don't go into four paragraphs of talking about how the system doesn't work if the designer has already told you this is the system. It's been play tested a bunch of times. There's other games. So, from the play tester point of view, there's a lot to kind of keep in mind. And then you create a nice little synergistic relationship between the designer and the lead and the players. And everybody's kind of doing what's expected of them and kind of giving back the thing that they're looking to get back. The designer is looking for feedback. The players are looking for, ooh, I got to play this cool new thing. And the GM is, you know, maybe... is looking for that kind of player thing as well, but maybe they're also looking for, like, this is giving me, I know I've had GMs, playtest GMs, who have said, like, part of the reason that they do it is, like, gets an inside look at, like they'll have a conversation with me, like, they learn more about game design, or at least they learn, like, my particular point of view on some things, and it helps them become better. If they're looking to design something down the road, or even if they're just looking to house rule stuff in their own games, like, getting perspective from how different designers and GMs approach different things, you know, they're seeking that sort of thing out. So that was a very long-winded explanation to a number of questions, but that's
but like, it also talks about like what you should expect when you are a playtester, which is one of the questions on our original topic list. Like, what are we expecting when we are going out to playtest things? And one of the things you do get out of it, especially if you are a game designer too, is, number one, knowledge on how to run a playtest. If you've never done it yourself, you should probably like do a playtest on your, like, playtest somebody else's game. Number two, insight into how other creators, hopefully a creator that you respect, their game design process. And number three, you just did playtesting for them. Now they have a reason to do playtesting for you back. And Jeff, I am sure that you get that a lot in writers groups. If you've been in a writers group, a newbie shows up and thinks that they're going to get their work critiqued day one. That's not really how it happens, is it?
No. In fact, the writing group that I was in had two things that I thought were really brilliant. The first one is you have to participate at three meetings before we'll review your work. It's like, and there were people who were like, I did it for 3 weeks. Here's my thing. Now I'm done. And it's like, well, okay, we don't like you anymore.
Yeah.
But at least it's like you get to see, to read other people's stories and you get to hear other people's critiques, because criticism and playtesting, it's a skill. And so if you're new to it, don't feel intimidated. Like it's a thing that you learn how to do like everything else, and you get to learn the terms that you get to express, like how I'm feeling now about this rule or how the game felt or whatever. And the other thing that I like, because I'm kind of bad at this in real life, is it's called the glass box method, which is that the author or designer at the end of the thing sits quietly and everybody gets, I think it was 3 minutes, 5 minutes, to say whatever they wanted to about the piece. Now, obviously, don't be abusive. But the reason why we did it that way is because you would say, well, I don't understand why this. I don't get why the chase rules are different from the main rules. And your gut reaction as a person who is like, here's my baby, tell me my baby's cute. And they're like, I don't think your baby's cute at all, is to say, well, hold on a second. And then you're no longer listening. You are, I have to respond to this criticism. And the point is not, you are not to respond, obviously, if you're being abused, don't take the abuse, but like really sit there and listen to what this person is telling you, especially if multiple people are telling you the same thing. And I found that most people who are good faith reviewers, playtesters, or whatever, will tell you things that they liked and things that they didn't like. And both of those things are valid in different ways. And I think one of the things that I try to tell to prep my playtesters, and one of the things that I try to do when I'm playtesting, is number one, I say, listen, you're playtesting this game. It may explode the second it hits the table. So if something doesn't work, don't feel bad that it doesn't work. Tell me what's not working. Like, tell me you don't understand. Tell me this thing that happened to you when you were making your character. And the other thing is to go in and basically say, as long as you are respectful of me as a person, you could tell me whatever you like. And if you have a question, don't be afraid to ask that question. And if you have a comment, don't be afraid to make that comment. Because I think, especially for people who are new to playtesting, they're like, well, it was fine. I don't know what to say. And it's like, well, and then you have to kind of pull it out of them. It's like, did you understand the rules? Did anything not make sense? When you had a skill, did you feel like you could use it, or did it feel pointless? That sort of thing. And one of the other things you do is, I like to do active listening when it's like you're explaining the game to me. It's like, is the game that I am reading different from the one you're telling me? And what and an example from my own life is I don't like making lists. There's lots of games which are lots of lists. And at one point I was play testing a game and I'm like, here's the list of equipment. It's not really complete because I hate making lists. I hate having players sit around buying things. And one of the play testers said, well, why do you do it then? And it was such an obvious question, but of course, again, monkey house. I'm like, because games have lists of things for you to buy. And he's like, don't worry about it. Don't do it. We'll figure it out. We're smart people. It's like Call of Cthulhu is one of my favorite games, and it's they have lists and lists and lists of equipment, and then they have somewhere tucked into the text. You could just assume that the investigators have what they would have if they were people. And it's like, okay, that's easy. Let's do that.
Yeah, that's what I did with Good Strong Hands because I didn't want to make an equipment list for a game that was so light on so much other stuff. It was just like, your characters are running around in a fantasy world and they have all the things they need to to get by in a fantasy world.
Right.
You want them to have
Because
a lantern? Sure, they have a lantern.
having a big long list of the game with not much else, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, unless the game is about how you use your inventory cleverly, you don't really need the equipment list. Unless that's what the game's about, you don't need it. People will figure it out. No, that's a great here's the other like really fun thing about playtesting is that, okay, yeah, you're coming from a perspective. Games have lists of equipment to buy. Somebody else might be bringing out all of the other games that they've ever played and play tested before in their life. They're bringing their rich experience into the playtesting experience. So you have the benefit of not just like your own knowledge and your own library of game knowledge, but also you get to feed on all of the game knowledge of those other players, which I think is also a reason why it's important to play test with different types of players. Play testing with people who don't just play D&D as their primary game. Play test with people who are just like really light gamers. Play test with people who like different sorts of things or have played and have experience with those sorts of things, and see how their feedback can give you ideas for not this current game, but for future games that you want to play or that you want to make or play. Maybe they'll give you some advice on some cool games to check out. That's always my favorite type of advice to give is like, hey, I'm making a game like this. Do you know anything that this reminds you of? And be like, yeah, check out this game and this game. See what you like from that. And then you can go over there and scrap them, tear them apart for scraps. And that stuff is always really satisfying. Also, as a play tester, it's really satisfying to be like, hey, this reminds me of blah, blah, blah. And that's never meant like, oh, this is too similar. Like, obviously, you're not creative enough to do your own thing. Ha ha ha. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this reminds me of this. Maybe you'll find some similar infrastructure over here for your cool game. Or I don't know. I would never like by the time I get to the point where I'm playtesting, I'm probably not going to reshape from the ground up my entire system. But what if there was a good system? What if there's a better system for your game?
Right.
Maybe,
Done
maybe
it. Yeah.
that.
Cold
Same
Warriors,
here.
completely different system than the one it was originally played, developed with.
And I will say, just to add on to that, when somebody says, I don't like this thing in this system, you still made it. It still exists. Put it in the trunk. Maybe
Yeah.
someday you could use it for a different thing, a better thing, a thing where it's more appropriate. Like these things aren't uncreated just because they don't work. You still have the experience of creating them and you still have the thing. And sometimes you're like, oh, that vampire thing and that mechanic, that's perfect. It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, that's what I feel like playtesting is really valuable just in that way. It gets you to think differently and with more people's brains. I think that we are stronger together.
yes,
Jeff,
agreed.
do you have any final thoughts on playtesting? Anything that's on your mind that you wanted to say before we start wrapping up?
I think I said pretty much everything I have. So yeah, no further insights for me.
Craig?
I'm good.
Yeah.
if from the point of view of expectations as a playtester, is please try to hit your deadline.
Yes.
If the GM is putting a deadline, or the designer is putting a deadline out there saying, hey, I'd really like to get feedback by such and such a date. A lot of designers, especially in the indie realm where it's, people are on slightly looser schedules, will be a little more forgiving if something has to get pushed, like that sort of thing happens. We get that. But also, like if your life, if the if too many people in the group had their life blow up, let the designer know that you're
Yeah.
not going to be able to hit the deadline at all, that you're not going to be able to play test this round, just that sort of thing, like communicate. And from the designer point of view too, like if you know that your life just got weird and you're not going to be able to even look at play testing material or play testing feedback, give the play testers a couple more weeks. Like if you know that like you've got 2 weeks where you're going to be putting the game design stuff aside because you got to deal with real life. Yeah, communicate. You don't just give them the play test materials and then they give you the feedback form at the end of the thing. You can talk about everything that's going on in between.
For sure. Jeff, thank you for joining us to talk about playtesting
Yes,
today.
thank
Always
you.
a pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
Where can we find you and your stuff?
So you can find me at JeffQuest, GeoffQuest.com. I'm also selling out of DriveThruRPG. I'll quickly say that I do boldly go the My love letter to Star Trek and role-playing game, and I'm really pleased to announce that I finally released season one, which is a 16 adventure campaign that
Cool.
writers worked on, and we're all super proud of it. So check that out if you have the time and the interest and the money.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ooh.
Thank you. It was literally a 5-year mission, but we did it.
Well, that's perfect.
Thanks.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Joska. You can find my games on itch.io, one of the games on itch.io. Yeah, you can find those there and also in some stores and stuff. Yeah.
And I'm Nerdburger Craig at Blue Sky. My website is nerdburgergames.com. The games are at DriveThruRPG. If you're for some reason a retailer, go to the retail page on my website, retail and distribution. You can buy things direct from me and support me even better. So yeah, because I had to troubleshoot some issues with the page with my web designer this past week
Oh,
as I
fun.
was sending emails to retail stores telling them, hey, look what you can do. And suddenly the page wasn't working properly. It's all
Oh,
fixed.
that's the
It's all
worst.
fixed.
Yay.
Thank you, Steph Sachs, for our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you for listening. We'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.